This is The Artist's Response with Elizabeth Stewart, and you're welcome to join us. Please stay tuned for a program produced by Richard Dugan and researched and presented by Elizabeth Stewart, who welcomes the great artists of our community. What follows is a conversation of an artist's experience about the artist's response to trying times, creativity, reinvention, recovery, and of course, flexibility, which is in fact the narrative of our present time.
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of Everything Valuable and Beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I am celebrating today Rod Roll because he is the honoree for Martin Luther King Jr. The celebration that goes on, it's been happening every year for the past 16 years. And this is the MLKSB celebration, Friday, July 14th through August 31st. And we want to celebrate Rod because he's been with the organization for a long time. And he's also one of our most notable citizens here in Santa Barbara. He's known for his professional photography in many, many places, but he's also known as a well-known jazz drummer and singer. And he's played with the Stiff Pickle Orchestra for three decades. He's just a really interesting gentleman, and I want to talk a little bit about his resume with him, but I want to bring him back, maybe to start the interview, to bring him back to New York, where he's working in the 70s with the New York Daily News. Rod, can you tell us a little bit about those days?
Well, okay. Actually, it was a... impromptu photo opportunity. I wasn't working for the New York Daily News, but I was actually going to sign for an unemployment check. I had just gotten laid off. And the night before, there was a huge rainstorm in New York City. And I was on the bus going to sign for the check. And I had my camera. And traffic was backed up, it seemed like for an hour. And I just said, you know, I'm going to get off and just walk. And I got off and walked, and it was a huge sinkhole in the middle of Jamaica Avenue in Queens. And I took my camera out and took a picture, went to sign for my check. And I said, you know what? I want to go down to the Daily News and see if they're interested in this picture. So I went down there and ended up speaking with the photo editor, and he showed me around and everything. He says, well, if we use the picture, you're going, we'll send you a check. It took all my information. And the next day I'm riding on the subway, and I just happened to look over somebody's shoulder, and there was the picture. So that was my first published picture in the New York Daily News. And I was like, whoa.
How old were you at this time?
Oh, gosh, I must have been like around 21 at the time.
And you were living in Queens at the time.
Yeah, I was living in Queens. And I had, I had my camera. I used to carry around the camera all the time. Once I started in photography, I used to carry around the camera. And, you know, when opportunities arose, then I would take a picture. But, yeah, this was just one of those things. I'm like, should I take a picture? I guess I'll take a picture since I'm here. And took the picture. And next thing you know, the editor said, well, if I was interested in shooting for the Daily News, they didn't have an opening. But he says, well, stick around. You never know what could happen. But I had another job opportunity that eventually I followed the trail, got me here to Santa Barbara. Yeah, and then moved to Philadelphia.
That was my next question. So how did you get to Santa Barbara? I know that you attended Brooks Institute of Photography in 1982.
Yeah. Well, that was the wrap because I was living in Charlotte, North Carolina at the time. And I was trying to... You know, I got kind of tired of not being technically fluent in photography. So I started to look into photography schools. And a friend of mine suggested, well, You can go to Rochester if you want to get really technical, Rochester Institute of Photography. There was a good community college in North Carolina that I could go to, or he mentioned Brooks. And I said, Brooks, that sounds familiar. I had seen one of those ABC Friday night specials, and they did a piece on the Shroud of Turin, and Vern Miller, who was an instructor at Brooks, was being interviewed. And I was thinking at the time when I saw it, wow, I would like to know this guy, this teacher and everything. So when my friend mentioned Brooks, that kind of rung a bell. And I said, I should try to go there. You know, I figured if I was going to go to school to learn photography, I was going to try to find the best. And Rochester was, I checked Rochester off the list because I had gone there a couple times before. And the first time I went to Rochester, was 15 below zero. And I said, nah, I'd try Santa Barbara, California.
Now, where exactly were you from? I mean, was it Oakland? Were you from Oakland originally?
No, I was from Queens, New York. And what had happened is I went, I had helped Sojourner. We were dating at the time, Sojourner Kincaid role, and we were dating at the time. And I helped her move to Berkeley to go to UC Berkeley, to go to law school there. And we drove through Santa Barbara and on the 101. And I said, wow, this looks like a nice town. I wouldn't mind living here. You know, so we went up in the Bay Area and I went back to North Carolina, went to Charlotte, North Carolina, where she went to school. And then when we heard about, mentioned to her about Brooks, and she said, yeah, that's where we went. We drove through Santa Barbara. So everything started to come together. And I moved out, eventually moved out here to California and enrolled in Brooks.
Right. You know, I just want to, dear listener, Rod is married to Sojourner Kincaid Roll, who was our poet laureate and a really influential member of the community as well. I want to just mention that at Brooks, Rod met other Black photographers. And in those days, apparently, they organized the first exhibition called Black Styles, Black Spaces. And then in 86, there was the first MLK Jr. photo exhibition at the Eastside Library that Rod participated in. And then he documented places with other photographers, other Black photographers, Brother Brown's Barbershop here in town, the Golden Bird Restaurant in town, the Dennis Palmer Elks Lodge in town. And so an important a gap, I guess, in our cultural history was filled when Rod came to town. Go ahead, Rod. Go ahead.
I was going to say that was around a time when A Day in the Life was very popular. There were a lot of photographers joining in Day in the Life exhibitions, and so we said, let's do a Day in the Life of Santa Barbara's Invisible Culture. So we got several photographers from LA, several from Brooks, and we assigned everybody a specific location or a business or a family, and we did a Day in the Life of Santa Barbara's Invisible Culture, which is the Black community here in Santa Barbara at the time. So it was a very interesting and rewarding documentary piece that we did. And everybody, you know, we were very excited about the whole experience.
So, you know, at this point, I just want to like bring this into like a cohesive thread, because at this point, you know, we're hearing that Rod is young, he's in his 20s, and he's, you know, dating Sojourner, and she's at Berkeley and he's at Brooks. And we are now kind of understanding that Rod is looking into documentary photography and being a documentarist, and he's also a photojournalist. And so those are two sort of separate hats that Rod's now starting to wear in his 20s. And a big thing that happens is the 1989, The Big Picture. And I wonder, Rod, if you could tell us about The Big Picture. How did that happen?
Well, The Big Picture came about because I was asked by the county to join in with Judy Baca, who is a world-famous muralist. And she did the Great Wall of L.A., and where she, the L.A. River, they did a whole, because it's concreted in, so she took the concrete walls and gathered a lot of young people together, a lot of artists, and they documented, they painted the history of Los Angeles on the walls of the river. So she was asked to come up here and do a mural or several murals on Guadalupe, town of Guadalupe in Santa Barbara County. She needed somebody to document the project and also to provide her with input about everyday life in Guadalupe. So my job was to come up here during the week and photograph everyday life in Guadalupe. And then on Friday when Judy would come up to Guadalupe, I would share with her all the photos that I took, and she would use that as part of the inspiration of the murals. At one point, Judy actually said, Rod, why don't you come up with a photo concept, one photo that says Guadalupe? So that's all I gave her some thought. And I said, well, why don't we do a town picture? We'll invite everybody down to Guadalupe Street, and we'll take a town photo. I didn't really think she was going to agree to it, but she did. And I said, oh, okay. But then we had to get the whole thing together. And Guadalupe, the town was very cooperative. Everybody came together. It was April. Let me see, what day was that? That was April 29th, 1989.
April 20. Yes, yes. 20,
yeah. April 29th, 1989.
Is that so? Rod, I see that, you know, obviously we're on the radio, so I can't let the listeners show, but on the back wall of your office, I see this very picture that we're talking about, which is The Big Picture, the town. Yes. Of Guadalupe in our county. Yeah. It is a whole, how many people are in that photo, do you think?
You know what? I have never counted. I would say about 300-400 people showed up. It's interesting because around 10 o'clock in the morning we're there, and the town is very quiet, and we had breakfast, some lunch, and then around 12, we started getting set up, and nobody's there. All right, we got a cherry picker and put it up in the middle of the street. The police department blocked off Highway 1, and all of a sudden, people were coming out of everywhere, you know, and filled up the street. Some technical information: Judy wanted me to shoot this on a large 4x5 camera. All right, so some old-fashioned cameras, we got to put the hood over your head and focus it and everything. And so I had to work really fast. I had practiced this photo for about 2 weeks, running through the routine and how to get this picture done. And so when the opportunity came, it was like, okay, it's like, do this, and get the photo. After about 10 minutes, everybody started to get distracted. So I pretty much only had like 10 minutes to take the picture, you know. And
just a quick question. It's a large format camera. So is this a glass negative then?
No, there was film. There were 4x5 sheets of film. So I had, I think I had 6 film holders. So I, it's 2 pieces of film per film holder. So it was like click, take, flip it over, click, flip it over, take it out, put another film holder in, click, flip it over, take another one, click, take that out. You know, so it was rapid succession, and everything had to happen. You know, if I forgot to click the shutter, if I forgot, you know, a lot of things could have gone wrong.
But well, the big picture and other photographs from the project were then subsequently exhibited in World Wall, a vision mm-hmm. of the future without fear at the Smithsonian.
Yeah. 2 years later, Judy had a big exhibition at the Smithsonian Experimental Gallery, and she wanted to include the Guadalupe Mural Project. So, actually, because I had graduated from Brooks by then, but I went back and talked to Ernie Brooks, and he gave me access to the dark rooms to print up the whole exhibit.
That's magnificent. That's a wonderful story. And we're going to go to quick break. When we get back, I want to talk a little bit about Rod was a stringer for the Gamma Liaison Picture Agency and Getty Images. And some of the photos that he's taken over the years, very important photos. And of course, his work has appeared in major media outlets. Those of us that are Michael Jackson fans, the photograph of Michael Jackson standing on top of a SUV outside the Santa Maria courthouse is fairly famous and won Rod a spot in the Getty Images Picture of the Year collection in 2004. So don't turn that down. Back with Rod Roll. And the reason that we're celebrating Rod today is he's the honoree of the MLK SB celebration, which is July 14th through August 31st. And he has been with that organization for the past 16 years, along with his wife, Sojourner Kincaid Roll, who was our past poet laureate. Super interesting couple, super interesting man. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. I'm speaking with Rod Roll, who is the MLK Santa Barbara Honoree of the Year. This is the Martin Luther King Jr. Committee of Santa Barbara that celebrates every year the birth of Martin Luther King. It's Friday, July 14th through August 31st. And I would just a little shout out that Soul Bites Restaurant will be hanging some of Rod's photographs, and you can have a bite of lunch or dinner and look at the photographs, some of which we're talking about today. Rod has been a professional photographer and photojournalist and a documentarist for his entire career. And then I also want to just do a quick shout out of how I have seen Rod, and I've seen him perform. He has been a drummer for many, many years, and Stiff Pickle is his band, and it's just a really interesting sound that he's got going, and he's been performing music as a hobby outside of his photojournalistic career for more than 50 years. So I want to talk a little bit about his inspiration, with his music. Just a quick shout out about the kind of work that Rod's been doing over the years that you may or may not see if you go to Soul Bites Restaurant. He's worked for Getty Images and Gamma Liaison. He documented the opening of the biosphere in the Arizona desert, the Vatican Advanced Technology Telescope, Vandenberg Space Launch Complex 6, He shot the Grammys. He shot our wildfires. He shot earthquakes in Northridge and Paso Robles. He shot the Alaska Airlines crash, the La Conchita mudslides, and wait for it, O.J. Simpson's trials, and Los Angeles riots. Wow. I got to ask you about O.J. Simpson. What was that like, Rod?
The first day was really an experience because I got had to get there early, like 7:30 in the morning, to check into the court down in L.A. So I get into court, and I'm sitting there. I'm part of the magazine pool. So they had a newspaper pool, and then they had a magazine pool, and then they had a television pool. So I was part of the magazine pool. So I get there, and O.J. walks in and takes a seat. For the first few seconds, I'm kind of starstruck. Oh, this is really O.J. Simpson. Oh, this is really his trial. You know, then I kind of caught myself. Said, all right, I'm here to do a job. Got to take some pictures. So I'm sitting there. The judge comes in, and he's shuffling through some papers. And then he says, who represents the magazine file? Rank magazine pool. So I raise my hand, and he says, state your name and your affiliation. So I give him that information. And I'm like, what is going on here? So he says, I had a report that the photographer for yesterday's magazine pool took some illegal photographs while the judge wasn't on the bench. So he says, okay, I'm going to hold you responsible for letting the magazine pool know that what the proper protocol is. So I'm like, oh no, I'm responsible. if somebody else comes in here and does the wrong thing, then I'm the one that gets in trouble. So as soon as court recessed for like, you know, an hour, a few minutes or so, I raced to the phone to call my editor and tell her what happened. Yeah. You would have thought of, you know, you see those scenes in the old movies where everybody races out of the court or races from the press conference and races over to the phone. That was me. To let them know what just happened.
Fantastic. Fantastic. You know, I also want to talk a little bit about your music, Rod, before we have to say goodbye, but tell us about the Stiff Pickle Orchestra and tell us, you know, what is some of the highlights of your career as a musician?
Let me see. I guess I may say a few things about Stiff Pickle. That was a great experience to work with Tom Murray and all the musicians that came through, Alex Marshall and all the musicians that contributed to Stiff Pickle. I'm sad to say that Tom passed away last year from cancer. But, you know, his memory lives on in the legacy. I run into people all the time who said, talk about how much they enjoyed listening to Stiff Pickle Orchestra. And, you know, so... And we made several recordings, and I think all those recordings are not all available, but they're, you know, some of them are online. Our videos are online, so people can see those videos. You know, if they go to YouTube and just type in Stiff Pickle Orchestra, they can see those videos. And I'd like to also thank the Santa Barbara Blues Society, who really believed in our sound. And they selected us to go to Memphis for the International Blues Challenge. So that was the highlight of our group's performances and then our relationship with the Blues Society afterwards.
So I just wanted a quick little thing in your bio really interested me, Rod, which is that Sundays at your house in Jamaica, New York, The Sundays were reserved for rock-ins, and your brother Errol and your dad listening to Charles Mingus and Miles Davis. And so it was from an early age on, you had a lot of exposure to wonderful music. That you started with the guitar, and that was too frustrating because there were so many people in your class that you said to your folks, I really want to study drums. And that was it, basically. Yeah. That was the end. That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote. I was fortunate that in growing up in New York, there were a lot of musical influences. Like I said, my father used to play during the winter months when everybody's stuck in the house. He would play Mingus Monk and Miles Davis and all the jazz greats. So we would hear that music all the time. And I mean, one time, my mother, she used to always take us to concerts. My father would expose us to records and tapes, and my mother would take us to different concerts. She took us to the Apollo on one Saturday afternoon. First time I went to the Apollo Theater in up in Harlem, and she took us to a Saturday matinee, and we saw a Western movie followed by a concert. There were two singing groups. I can't remember those singing groups. And then Gladys Knight and the Pips came on, and then the closing act was the Isley Brothers. So that was our entertainment for a Saturday afternoon.
Wow, that's
so
fantastic.
Those are the kind of influences that really
go ahead.
Helped my career, music career.
I want to also just say that, you know, his Rod's civic involvement, of course, he's the honoree for this MLK Santa Barbara celebration. Martin Luther King Jr. Committee has honored him this year. But also want to give just a shout out for he's covered the Santa Barbara International Film Festival. That has been pretty important to some of his work was in Variety. He has covered Hollywood or Access Hollywood. He's covered the film festival for them as well. But on the other side, you know, we have the glamorous side there, but on the other side, he's taught basic photography workshops and video production at the California Men's Colony through the UCLA Extension Arts Corrections Program. And so he's worked in the prisons as well, teaching photography, photojournalism at Santa Barbara City College and photography at UCSB. So kind of a well-rounded individual for sure. And Rod, congratulations on the fact that you're the honoree for Martin Luther King Jr.'s celebration this year. And we look forward Everybody looks forward to checking out Soul Bites Restaurant and their new spin on soul food. And while you're eating, you can see Rod's beautiful photographs. Rod, thank you so much for joining us today. I really look forward to Soul Bites and seeing your show there. Congratulations again.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. And I'd like to invite everybody to go to Soul Bites. And see, we like to call them photo panels. They're four panels that illustrate the 16-year history of MLKSB here in Santa Barbara and all their work. And it's also a dedication, a celebration to all those who came and supported their activities and supported Martin Luther King and Martin Luther King Weekend. And I say in hindsight, you can look at it and say, when called, Santa Barbara did the right thing and supported Martin Luther King on those particular days.
Well, thank you for joining us, and thank you very much for all that you and Sojourner do for the community, too. Marvelous, marvelous couple. Well, when we get back from the break, I have my friend Claudia McGeary on. And she is going to talk to us about her new show. We've got some actors lined up for you as well. Her show is I Can Hear You, Damn It. And the premise is very interesting. If you can imagine You were a patient, and you were told that you were in your family was told you're in a coma and you can't hear a thing, but you heard everything that was going on in the hospital room. That's the premise of the show. And so don't turn that down. We'll be back with Claudia McGarry and some wonderful performers giving us a little taste of I Can Hear You, Damn It. Right now, performance is, well, we'll get into how you're going to get tickets too in a minute. Don't turn that down. Back in a second. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. We're talking with Claudia McGarry and her cast of her original play, I Can Hear You, Damn It. And I'm going to hand it over to Claudia to introduce what's going to happen next. Claudia, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I'd like to explain a little bit about the play. Good friend of mine was in a coma a few years ago for 8 days, and she actually died and came back to life. And I always was thinking if only I could do a play about that, that experience, because I actually was in the room with her when she woke up by myself with her. And that was quite amazing. But this play is it's fictional. It's about a woman who is in a coma that can hear everything, and the hospital has made a mistake, and they think she can't hear anything and that she has no brain activity. They've just made a horrible mistake with two charts and mixed it up. And so what I have in this play are a whole array of characters that come to visit her thinking that she's completely brain dead. And so they say a lot of things. They're very emotional. They say things that they meant to say. They have apologies to her. They tell her secrets. Her two kids come again and again, an ex-girlfriend that kind of messed her up in business, an old boyfriend that wants to get back together with her. It's just all these different people that make their way into the room while she's in a coma hearing everything. So we have a few of those characters here today. We have Claire Waterhouse, who plays her daughter, Amy. We have Peter Rojas, who plays the doctor, Dr. Ginto. We have Alfred Smith, who plays Jerry, who is the ex-boyfriend, who's kind of a jerk. Sorry, Alfred. We have Aubrey, who is a long-lost daughter who comes back. And then Boyana Hill, who plays the woman in the coma. She plays the actual coma patient, Audrey Conn. And I forgot to mention, Audrey Conn is a famous actress. So that allowed me to make it so that all these people heard about the accident on the news, people that she hadn't seen in a while. So that brought out, you know, a lot of interesting aspects to it. So it's been really fun, really hard working cast. We've been rehearsing for about 5 weeks, I think. Yeah, it's just been really fun. So.
So do you have something that you'd like to perform for us, Claudia?
Well, I kind of just sprung this on them. But if anybody, so Peter and Boyana, do you think you guys could maybe do that final scene, Peter, when you're telling, or Boyana's telling you what to do with Nurse Lizzie? That be okay?
Sure.
So I'll just tell them, this is sort of towards the end of the play. Peter is infatuated with the nurse that takes care of Audrey, and Audrey has heard their relationship this whole time while she's been in a coma. So she has words of wisdom for Dr. Ginto.
Dr. Ginto, listen to me. You have to set her free. Nurse Lizzie, I know you love her, but she needs to be on her own right now. You know what they say. If you let them go or set them free, they will come back to you if it is meant to be. You need to let her go.
She isn't a homing pigeon. She's my girlfriend, and she just expects me to let her go to do her own thing. Well, I'm supposed to wait for her no matter how long it takes.
Yes, and you will.
I will?
If you truly love her, you will. You will give her the freedom she's craving right now. I understand her. Acting is in her bones.
Okay, Mrs. Khan. I will call your entourage in. I can see this situation is far from being just a medical one.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So we have with us Peter Rojas and Aubrey Wynn, Alf Smith. Who else do we have?
Boyana Hill and Claire Waterhouse.
Okay. And Richard's saying we have to go. Then Claudia, I'd love it if we could do another little section of the play.
Okay. Right now? Or
we're going to go to quick break. And then when we get back from the break, maybe you could get your actors to do one little quick other little dialogue for us. Sure. I love that. I love it.
Okay. Thanks.
Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. We're celebrating Claudia McGarry's new play, I Can Hear You, Damn It. And we have the premise being somebody who's in a coma, but can hear everything that's going on in the room. And so, kind of an interesting idea. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I'm speaking with Claudia McGarry, who is a playwright, and we've covered a number of her plays. And Claudia, will you tell us, just before we get too far, where the play is performing and where and how we can get some tickets?
Yeah, the play is at Center Stage Theater. It's Saturday and Sunday this weekend, on Saturday at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m., and Sunday only at 2 p.m., and at www.centerstagetheater.org. You can get the tickets online or in person, although tickets are really starting to sell, which I'm so excited and grateful about. And can I set up the two scenes? We're gonna do two short scenes, really short. Okay, so the daughter finds out that she's got this long lost relative she didn't know about and kind of confronts her. And then the ex-boyfriend, when he comes in to see her, he says a few things to her.
I only just got to see her. I haven't even officially met her when she's awake.
Who the hell are you?
Your mother is my mother. She had me at 15 and she put me up for adoption. I have wanted to meet her for so long, but out of respect for my adoptive parents, I waited until they were both gone, but now it seems I've waited too long.
So you're my half-sister?
Great, thanks you guys. And then Al is the ex-boyfriend who she does not want to see.
When I finally saw you, after 4 decades of not seeing you, I admit it, I had built you up in my mind. I imagined you to still look like you did when we were 20. When I saw you, you had put on a few pounds. I admit, I was shocked. But you hide it in your costumes, you know, really well.
Oh my God, you are ridiculous. I'm almost in my 60s, postmenopause. And besides, look at you. You have a paunchy stomach yourself, you judgmental jerk.
Now, may I ask, Claudia, the character that plays the actress, she's not speaking really, she's thinking these things, is that right?
She's off stage and you can hear all her thoughts. So it's really cool. The director put her on a mic. So her whole sound kind of sounds ethereal, like it's coming from her head. And she does an incredible job. And then everyone else is, you know, right on stage flurrying about doing their thing. So it's just really turning out. It's exactly how I imagined it in my head. I'm so excited.
Oh, and I've got another question. I wonder if each of your actors could say something about the play. But Richard's giving us a sign we got to go to quick break. When we get back from the break, I'd love to have like a round table. You've got some wonderful actors with you here today and what they think about the play, what it means to them. I'd love to hear that. Okay, let's take a quick break. And when we get back from the break, we're going to have a little bit of words from the actors. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm talking with Claudia McGarry, a playwright that I've covered her career. I just enjoy her so much. And she's got a bunch of actors with us today celebrating her new play, I Can Hear You, Damn It. And the premise of which is a famous actress goes into a coma. She is visited by all sorts of people from her past, some she would love to see, some she would not like to see. And the problem is that she is hearing everything, although the doctors tell her family and friends she can't hear a thing you're saying, but she's listening and she's responding in her own head. So let's start with Peter. Peter, what do you think about the play? What do you think about your character?
Well, I'm learning a lot about the medical profession. Not having a background myself in that area, we're grateful to have an actual medical doctor in the cast. And she's been a good source of reference. And Claudia has done her homework, making sure that what we say in the play is legit and is backed up by research or practice. So one thing about the play that I've done for the first time is I created the program. The show program, and I've never done that before.
So beautiful.
So it was a lot of fun doing that. So, yeah. And Dr. Ginto, even though it sounds like a 90s DJ, no, he's very much a professional.
Fantastic. Okay, Alf, what about you?
Well, I want to give a shout out to Claudia for just a marvelous script. It weaves together so many different characters. And then to Jordana, the director, who gave us, the actors, the freedom to explore the characters very fully. And we've been experimenting and adding bits right up to the last minute. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And Aubrey, what about you?
Well, this is my first play in Santa Barbara, so I'm thrilled to be here. I'm super inspired that Claudia's producing original work and doing it so often. I don't know that many other people who are creating a play a year, and that's been an exciting process to be part of. In the room. Sorry, go ahead.
Where are you based, Aubrey?
I'm based out of San Luis Obispo. I'm from San Luis Obispo, and I'll be moving to LA in the fall.
All right. Okay. And who else do we have? Claudia, who else?
Boyana. We have Boyana plays Audrey, the coma patient.
Oh yeah, Boyana, tell us about what your character.
Well, I am originally from Czechoslovakia, and so I'm sort of a flamboyant actress, but of course I have been humbled in this state. I find it interesting that I can be off stage and sort of express all of the thoughts and feelings that I couldn't otherwise have a chance to express. So it puts me in a unique situation. And of course, I have a mic and I hear myself echoing at the Center Stage Theater. It's a beautiful experience overall. I just love the camaraderie and the creative process. And it's just such a privilege to work with Claudia. I agree with Aubrey. Her creative genius just doesn't cease to amaze me.
We still have Claire, too. I forgot about Claire. So can we hear Claire real quick?
Oh, hi, I'm Claire, and I play Amy, Audrey's daughter, and it's just such a joy. I echo what Aubrey said. You know, we so admire how Claudia writes these fantastic scripts and brings together such an incredible, talented, kind, passionate group of people, and it's just been a joy to get to watch all these lovely, interesting, funny characters.
So that's fantastic. At Center Stage Theater, don't miss it. It's I Can Hear You, Damn It. And thank you so much for being with us, all you guys.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.